The following podcast is not relating to my teachings and work at Del Cid Medical Center and is for entertainment purposes only.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of the Life of Flow podcast. And today we were lucky enough to have Dr. Karen Bernard. Karen has a super interesting story. She was a staff endocrinologist at Duke for the longest time and then developed an inkling to pursue a different career path and became a career consultant for physicians and guiding physicians take their careers to whatever they want to be in transitions, be it new clinical settings, being, you know, expanding into different industries. She guides physicians that have the inkling but don't know how to proceed through that process. And she was very funny. She was very interesting. And I hope you guys enjoy.
Let's do it.
Two vascular surgeons walk into a bar and come out with a podcast. We are talking everything vascular and not. Welcome to the Life of Flow podcast.
Welcome so much, Karen. And would you mind just expanding a little bit on that introduction and explaining to our audience how you help physicians?
Sure. Thank you so much, Lucas and Miguel, for inviting me to be here and have this conversation. I think it's a really important conversation we're going to have, and I really hope the audience will find something valuable from it. I started my career as an academic internist, made a pivot about 10 years in to do endocrinology, and I absolutely loved endocrinology, and I loved academics, teaching, mentoring. I mean, I was all in. And honestly, I thought that it would be my forever career. And interestingly enough, about 10 years later, I started feeling like something just wasn't right anymore. I couldn't actually pinpoint it in the beginning. I actually thought that maybe something was wrong with me. Like, why wasn't I as enthusiastic and as engaged anymore? And I, you know, through a process, I finally realized that some of my values had changed. That was one of the most important things that was happening, is that I wanted to spend more time with my family. I had sacrificed a ton of family time for my career. And I really wanted freedom and autonomy. And so I started looking at options. And honestly, I didn't know very clearly what I was going to do next. I just knew I needed autonomy. I needed flexibility. I needed to be able to work anywhere in the world. And I wanted to still really watch people grow and develop. And because I had done that for so many of my students and residents and fellows in terms of helping them with their careers, when I did a bit of a coaching training course, just a quick weekend just to see what it was like, I just was like, yes, this is it. And so I started coaching on the side and recognized I had a minimum viable product. And then I actually quit completely 4 years ago, almost to the day. And here I am, and I have not looked back. You know, and I think part of this is that I really believe that physicians deserve to be in jobs, careers, where they're making a meaningful contribution and that where they're happy, whatever that is. And so my mission is to help physicians create that. So it could be anything from, you know, I've helped a cardiothoracic surgeon who was really struggling in a certain environment, and she pivoted to moving into a completely different practice environment. And it's been a couple of years and she's doing really well. And all she needed was just to recognize that there were some issues, and she didn't want to give up cardiothoracic surgery. She just wanted to be in a different space. And helping physicians who are still wanting to do medicine but cut back and just diversify their income streams, that's a really big deal right now. And I think more and more physicians are seeing, hey, I've got tons of skills that I can adapt elsewhere and make some additional money. Or just, I want out. Like, I am... It's joyless. I'm unhappy. Get me out now. I'm burnt out. And so I help physicians do that as well. And that's a variety of things people transitioning to, you know, utilization management or pharma or, integrative medicine, palliative care, medical writing, coaching. There's a huge sort of list of options. It really depends on, you know, what skills you want to keep using and what kind of a life you want to live. So I'm going to stop there and see if you have any questions.
Yeah. This is cool. This is cool. I'd like to take the first part of our conversation to learn. I understand the 60,000 foot view and elevator pitch. I want to dive into what was happening with you when you decided to pivot. I find that extremely interesting because, you know, we put so much time into what we do. You know, it's such a long play. Medicine is such a calculated event that requires so much time, so much effort, so much qualifications. It's just like the eternal ultra marathon of professions. And, you know, kind of brushed through, well, I was ready to do something else. Can we go into that? Was it, you know, was it safe to say that it was a dark time in your career? Do you believe that you yourself were potentially burned out at the time? Or just let's expand a little bit. What was going on? What year was it? Where were you? What were you doing? And let's talk about the things happening in your life that led you to believe that there was a time for a change, despite how much time and effort you had already invested in this career path.
Yeah, and you're absolutely right. We invest so much time and effort, and really for a highly specialized skill, you know, you are in a highly specialized area. I was. And I think, so it was 2018 when I finally saw that what was happening to me was I was maybe, it's called quiet quitting, although it wasn't really quitting, because in medicine you can't quit till you really quit. But I was just withdrawing from activities I used to really enjoy. I would sign up for stuff. I would be, you know, wanting to teach, and I was, yeah. And I just found myself, something just wasn't right. And as I explored that, I wasn't truly burnt out, but I think it just wasn't the place for me. I just felt like this just wasn't how I wanted to contribute anymore. And it was a process, you know, it came on, you know, gradually. And in 2018, I mentioned, because that's when I started working with a career coach, recognizing that I needed some guidance, because I didn't actually know really what I needed to do. But there were signals in the years, you know, in the couple of years even leading up to that. I was getting more migraine headaches. I was feeling, just so exhausted. And again, I was, you know, maybe I was borderline burned out, but I wasn't depressed. I wasn't disengaged from anything. It was, I think most people around me wouldn't even have noticed. But my body was clearly signaling to me that I actually saw a neurologist. I had an MRI. I was like, what's going on? Like, I'm having I have to be out of work for 2 days a month. So all of that was percolating. So by the time I got to the career coach, my thing with her was, if something isn't right and I'm not sure, maybe I need to stay and just, you know, maybe the problem's me. Maybe I just need to, because everybody around me looked fine. You know, now everybody's talking about burnout and being unhappy and doing other stuff. Back then, I felt pretty much like, well, maybe I'm just a loser and I need to like fix myself. But I recognized, no, there's something just wasn't working for me anymore. And really when I started, the values is a huge deal. When I started seeing that freedom was really important to me and I had none, freedom of travel, freedom to see my family in Africa, freedom to spend a month there if I needed, be with my family, those sorts of priorities I had, you know, were second and third on my list, or sometimes even lower. And it was just time. It was time to say, okay, what's happening here is it's kind of like a values clash in some ways, where, yes, if I could have seen patients remotely from Africa, I may have done that. But it was those values, like I mentioned, the freedom, the family, and the autonomy over my schedule, that this is, you know, plus I was at the time when I left medicine, I was 54. So it was 4 years ago. And so it's kind of young to retire, but, you know, and everybody said, oh, if you work a few more years, you'll get this, you do that. I'm like, mm-mm. No, I got to do this now. And it wasn't an easy decision. It took me 3 years from the time I decided I probably need to start looking at something else to the time I actually quit completely. In fact, I went part-time, then I quit.
Yeah, I think the concept of autonomy is something that's, I think, not just people in medicine, but people, like most people, are giving more emphasis to. And I think that has to do a lot. If for some reason, that feels like it has to do a lot with what we're seeing as far as burnout and the conversation about burnout. There's little autonomy in what we do. We are kind of slaves to our schedule, and that can feel very constricting. You know, that I was talking to a friend recently, and he has a little poster in his house. Where it's basically a human life, it basically illustrates that we can have up to 11 different lives because the time it takes to master anything in particular, any skill in particular, to put those 10,000 hours in, you know, somebody calculated them to be like 7 years, and the average human lives 7 years period. So we have time and space, even though it doesn't seem like it, to master other skills. So even though it can be very scary after putting all the work in.
By your definition, that means a seven-year-old gets to pivot?
You know, it's just an illustration, bro. It's just an illustration of a concept.
I'm sorry I clipped your wings there because yeah. That didn't make much sense. But well, I get it.
You know, I guess so, take you know, from where you're 21.
I would say at least eight
lives.
I'd say at least three.
Yeah, okay.
At least three. Safe pivots.
Yeah.
But that's scary.
Yeah.
That's scary. What was your overwhelming sentiment pulling you against taking this decision? Was it pride? I'm a doctor. How can I see myself as leaving a profession of such grace and such respect? Was it fear of failure? Shit, I'm going to leave a W-2 salary and I'm going to jump into this thing that's maybe crazy, but it's going to give me more liberty. But how can I pay the bills? Like, what do you think is the sentiment that you had the most quarrel with?
Mm-hmm. I'm going to answer that, but I just want to pick up on a thread, Lucas, on your point about that we have multiple careers in our lives. And I think that's being borne out more and more, that the idea of staying in one career for your entire life is becoming less and less of a thing. And especially with AI and all sorts of changes happening in the world, I see that happening more and more. And, you know, I'm never not a doctor. I'm using the skills that I acquired in my roles to do my work. And I think that's the really important thing that physicians, in my experience, we don't actually get just how many transferable skills we have. So you're not really starting over. Some people are completely starting over, but even then you're building on something that you've already been developing. You know, and so Miguel, to get your question, what was the biggest thing? I'd say for me, because of my personality, I'm very risk averse. Okay. It was fear. It was fear that I was going to fall flat on my face. And so I mitigated that, right? I first went part-time. I started coaching to see, is this something that people would want? Can I make a living? Can I, not only that, but am I going to help people? Am I going to get them the results they want? I mean, that's a big deal. Like, I'm not just in this for, you know, let's chat and have a, no. And so when I recognized, okay, there's a chance, then I just had to take that leap. And I think letting go of the security of a W-2, really well-paying job with, you know, if I'd stayed 4 more years, I would have had, you know, government retirement, all. But I just, there was just something in me that just overrode. And again, was the why. I think my why was so incredibly powerful that it sort of helped me take that leap. And it was I talk about taking strategic small risks when one makes a change. And, you know, for you, Miguel, it sounds absolutely terrible. So you're not going to do it. But when you get to the time where you're like, do I know it? You're going to make little small incremental changes and to get your lay of the land, potentially. You know, it's a big deal, and it's a big deal for all physicians. And I can tell you the identity thing is huge, and being part of a community. I mean, I think looking back, what do I miss the most in the 4 years? It's not really the patients, because I still do a little bit of, I don't do any patient care, but I still do some CME with endocrine, so I still get to kind of play with the feedback loops. But what I really miss are the people. I miss seeing like those daily collegial interactions and the students. I do miss that. But I make sure I get it in other ways. And it's not enough for me to want to go back.
I really, really love this correction you did on my own words about how, you know, you're stopping, like you were forgoing your career as a doctor, which is, you know, a really good call out. You know, you don't not, you know, you get to that point, you don't stop being a doctor, right? You stop potentially exercising clinical duties in a capacity, in a role, but you've learned so much that you can apply, to your point, in so many other ways. I you know, in my mind, I'm thinking like discipline, tenacity, right? I mean, these things are engraved in us, right? In our careers, it may not necessarily be adjusting insulin for somebody, but you know what? As an entrepreneur, if you don't have that discipline, if you don't have that tenacity, if you don't have long place, the understanding that there's a lot of things that take time and that you have to keep your mind, you know, all these other things, I think, I'm guessing, that these are the kind of exercise that you help kind of pull out. These are the things that you help your clients realize. Listen, you have all this knowledge set. It can be transferable and reapplied in many other points of view.
Do most people that come to you or start a conversation with you have an idea of where and how they want to pivot? Or, you know, is it a blank slate?
Or are they just lost souls?
Yeah.
Seeking help.
Yeah, most, I would say 85% come to me and all they know, they're like me. I just never want to leave. I don't know what.
So all I know is I'm done.
Yeah. But so please help me. Now, if somebody's really burned out, I usually suggest either, you know, working with me and getting therapy at the same time, or, you know, taking a break or doing what they can to, because sometimes burnout, one can't think creatively. It's really hard to find the energy to, you know, to do some of the work that's required to really figure out the next step. But yeah, 85% come and really want to know, this is what's going on with me. I'm really not happy in my career anymore. I'm looking at 6 to 12 months. I want out, but I don't know what. And that's where we start. And then the other 15% are actually, I do interview prep as a standalone. So they've been interviewing for non-clinical positions usually, and they're not getting bites. And so I help them strategize with that. So I do some of that strategy piece for about 15%, where they know what they want, but they're either applying and they're not getting interviews, or they're getting interviews and not jobs. And there's a way to identify what they're doing wrong, and I, you know, sort of not what they're doing wrong, but what they could do better, and then I help them with that.
You know, therapy and coaching are two things that I've done myself, and I felt that finding the right one is almost like finding your you know, your wife, your business partner. Like you potentially go through different iterations, right? All human connections may be different, and I feel, I mean, I don't want to sound too corny, but like almost like shopping around. I don't want to be superficial, but you kind of like have to find somebody that really connects with you. And in my experience, what really connected me was with this one person in Arizona who would send me to eat all these books. But there wasn't really it wasn't like a particular reason. Like it was like, I think you just need to read this book. Mm. And I would just gobble a book up. And I didn't understand really what that book meant. And but then like at the end, as we were like going through our process and I was reading and I was doing all these, I started understanding what she was trying to maybe get to, but obviously it was my work, right? It was my process. So I guess I'd love to hear from you, Karen, what tools, you know, for me, it was reading. What tools have you found in your work with physicians? Because, you know, we're a different animal. I think, you know, coaching for, you know, sports is potentially different from coaching for physicians. And in your optics, what has been tools that you think are really good or those that you potentially like using in your work?
Yeah. And I just want to pick up on what you said about shopping around. I absolutely believe that. I think there's got to be a really good match and chemistry with the coach. I think I interviewed about five different career types of coaches before I chose mine, and I encourage people who come to me to do the same. And from the coach's perspective, I don't work with everybody that approaches me because I've got to feel like our styles will match. And so I have a very structured process because that's how I am. And that's most physicians really relate to that because medicine has been very structured. It's hard, but you kind of have the stepping, you kind of know which, I got to pass this exam and then I'm going to do this. It's pretty much laid out. And suddenly, I don't know, there's 72 different careers I can do and I don't know which one. So I start off, the foundation of my program is looking at, you know, who are you? Who have you become? What are your values? And then really importantly, in your work, what's working and what's not? And of all those skills that you swim like a fish and you don't even realize you're swimming in a sea of skills, but of those skills, which do you really enjoy? What gives you energy? And what would you want to take with you? So at this point, we're not even looking at job options. We're just looking at who are you? Because that is, so many of us have lost touch. You know, you're in this, on this treadmill for 25, 30 years sometimes. Mm-hmm. And you're like, wait a minute. I used to like to paint. So that's really the foundation. I do a skills assessment, personality assessment. All of these are assessments that I do and take clients through. And I think I really want to emphasize the skills piece because I think that's the one thing that we don't realize. And I love seeing how physicians light up when I say, oh, that thing that you're doing there, that could earn you a lot of money per hour. Just that little thing that you can do in your sleep. And they're like, but it's just what I do. And I'm like, yeah, it's just what you do. But it's somebody woke up on the other side of the world needing that and is willing to pay you for it. And then the next pillar is I go through a process where we sort of then look at what are some potential options. And I sort of think what I think I don't tell them, but I sort of give some suggestions, but I also provide a long list that they kind of work through to see what matches. And then we go through what I call a career experiment phase, which is, okay, so utilization management, what is that? Like, I'm going to go to the dark side? maybe. But then let's get a taste, right? Talk to somebody who's in the career, like take a mini course. Like I did a 3-day coaching course that doesn't cost. This is not a take a lot, get an MBA kind of mini career experiment. This is do something free or cheap to give you an experience of what you might be doing, what your day to day might be like. And that's possible for some things, not so possible for other things. But that's then where the next pillar is the relationships, you know, Now it's, let's look at your network. Let's look at who do you know, who do you know who knows, and start building those relationships to begin to get into that field. And now then it's going in all directions after that, because then it becomes very bespoke as to what direction you're going. So if this is a clinician going into pharma who has absolutely no research experience, we've got to build the platform first. And that's also, I have a structured approach to how to do that so that they can be a competitive candidate. And then it's, you know, I get, you know, then it's strategy. You know, what's your plan? What are the steps you have to take? And then after that, it might be applying for jobs, getting their resume ready, getting their LinkedIn profile ready, interview prep. So it kind of then after that, it really depends. But the basic structure is really getting clear, you know, networking, learning, experimenting, getting your vision, and then your strategy. And weaving in all of that is the stuff you've been referring to, Miguel, which is the very difficult emotional roller coaster along the way, because it's not easy. And there's lots of doubt and fear and shame and guilt and all of those things that come up for people as they think about leaving.
What are some skills that you think physicians as a group have that they might not be aware of that transfer easily into other possible jobs?
Mm-hmm. So I think you mentioned a couple, like the problem-solving, organizational skills, communication. Now, we actually, when we communicate, we've all given talks. We all do writing. Whether we think we're good writers or not, we're probably better than most. And being able to, in that communication, also the rapport building. As physicians, you go into a room and within 2 minutes, you've got to develop trust with that patient. You know how to listen. You know how to create trust. And then really often give really bad news, might be the case, or deal with difficult emotions. So you're those kinds of skills in terms of working with other people, whether they're patients or any, are gold. And then our leadership. We don't realize, even if you don't have a leadership, you know, you're not a CMO, you're just, like I had a client the other day say, well, I just do rounding and I have the PharmDs and the NPs and I have the students and I have the social worker and I lead the team. And I'm like, yeah. And how are you holding, juggling all of their needs and the patient? That is leadership. So I think leadership is another one where we just sort of brush that under the carpet because it's what we do. Almost any physician is a leader. But then there are kind of other things like, for instance, for the pharma world, you know, physicians will say, well, I have no research experience. And that might be true. However, you look up stuff, you research articles, you practice evidence-based medicine. You look at a drug's side effects before you prescribe them. You monitoring that drug's impact on somebody. You know, when you're a physician in the OR, you're staying calm under a very high-pressure situation. ED docs, the same thing. And many of it, you know, ICU docs, think about that skill that I think is another one people often don't realize, that being able to stay calm in a high-pressured situation is golden. For certain careers. And then I think the, you know, just our broad medical knowledge, again, it's something that we just take for granted. But if you look at some of the medical consulting gigs or requests that one gets, and it's like, oh, this is what I do every day. So medical knowledge. And also, another thing to think about is process flow in a clinic. Whether you're in private practice or in academic practice, all of us have had these, why is my patient not being roomed on time? Or why is it taking forever for this person to get on the table in the OR? And you're already beginning to troubleshoot, right? So all of those process flows that we either formally or informally can diagnose the lesion, you know, where's the problem, here's the root cause, and deal with it, all of that is transferable. I mean, I'm just scratching the surface here, but those are what come to mind at the moment.
What are the most frequent, if it is that there is a most frequent one, two, or three things that you've noticed end up being the pivots of the physician seeking something?
Mm. Yeah. So the most frequent in my experience, and this might be true for everybody, but I'm going to speak to my experience, is utilization management. Pharma, usually entry-level positions like drug safety, medical monitoring, principal investigator, sometimes medical affairs if it's an academic physician who's got a little bit of research. So utilization management, which includes clinical documentation integrity, pharma. And then I have, maybe because I'm a coach, I have a few, I'd say my next highest is going into either mostly kind of health coaching, but I have somebody who's done functional medicine to become a functional medicine coach, and a lifestyle medicine is becoming very popular, and then, you know, weight loss, obesity medicine coaching. And then so I'd say those are the top three of sort of different careers. But then there's also this bucket of people, of physicians who sometimes just need to go, they still remain clinical, but they go part-time and add something as an additional stream of income, or they change their practice location. So say that's another thing, that's another outcome that's not uncommon, especially if a physician is a breadwinner and really cannot really take a big dip in salary. You know, we end up sort of developing, you know, what I call sort of a portfolio career, where you do a little bit of medicine and you do a little bit of this, a little bit of that to make up the income.
I would have thought that that would have been the first one, that most people coming to you thinking that they're at a point where they need a change, that mostly they're not realizing that they're just sick of where they're at. I think there's a lot of movement in the mid-career, right? I want to say in vascular surgery, about 60% at 2 years change, but that's usually because they don't know what job they're looking for that they like. But then there's another big wave that happens about 7 to 10 years into your tenure. You're like, okay, well, this is sucky. And, you know, I'm like over the politics, or I'm over this, or I'm like just doing the same thing mindlessly every day. And so I would have thought that would have been like kind of like your top one. But the fact that they're pivoting actually to a different career, to a potentially partially non-clinical career, is impressive to me.
Is there a pattern, just touching what you're saying, mm-hmm. is there a pattern on time frame? It's like, are most people that you see coming to you at a particular stage in their career that you can identify?
Like time-wise, you mean?
Time-wise, yeah.
Yeah, I'd say most of mine are mid to late careers.
How many years?
15, between 15 and 25. That's what I would think of as mid to late.
And in their
25 years in, sorry, as an attending. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And in your conversations with them, at what point did they start entertaining these thoughts?
Years. You know?
Years. Yeah.
I'm laughing because it's me. Yeah. I just relate. So I so understand the resistance to making the change, especially when you're late career and you're just a few years from potentially, you know, maybe I can just work a few more years. So yes, it's mid to late. That's most. You asked about what's most, and that's, I would say that's most of my clients. The other trend I am seeing, and I've actually just started helping a couple of clients, but I usually refer them to somebody else because it's not my area, is physicians still wanting to practice medicine, but the autonomy and some of that flexibility than going into more of a direct primary, direct specialty practice. And so that seems to be something that's happening more and more. So not just, oh, I need out of clinical, but I think I want to do this on my own terms, which is really great that is happening. And that's a trend I'm seeing, and we'll have to see where that goes, but I am seeing that.
Yeah, I've actually, I have a clinic up in Burnett, Texas, like an hour northwest of Austin. And I've, spent some time with the local physician community there. There's a really robust society. And I was like super interested to see that a lot of specialties, OBGYN, family medicine, are doing concierge medicine, where they don't work for hospital, they don't work for insurance, they just have a certain number of clients and they provide kind of really personalized care, the true meaning of it. So that was super interesting. I've always wondered if there's a way for surgeons to do that. It seems that there'll be some financial hurdles around it, but that was very interesting. The other question I had for you is like, once, our mind is so stuck to using averages, but what time frame from the moment you start to the moment where you kind of like release them into the wild, what does that time frame look like for most people coming in? When they come in lost souls, as Miguel said, to like fully self-actualized, self-authoring, physicians mm-hmm. in a new stage of their career.
Yeah. And this is where it's almost like we look at a median rather than average, because it's,
yeah.
So my program normally is about, it depends on the person, but it's between 4 to 6 months. And I usually say by the end of that, you'll have a plan, you'll know where you're going, and you're going to rinse and repeat. And I do offer ongoing support after that. So the shortest time frame I would say the shortest time frames, and again, it thinks the landscape changes as well, but I would say UM has been, I actually had I had one client was within 6 weeks, he had his job in UM. And he was just one of the rapid implementer, and he just knew somebody, and that's the shortest. But generally, I'd say UM could be, 3 to 6 months. Except if you know somebody a little bit of luck, you can definitely do it sooner. This is not, I'm not saying this is how it's got to be, but, and then pharma has been taking a lot longer. Used to be, pharma, it was 6 to 8 months now, and even then was a stretch. Now it's, especially for folks who have no research experience, it's taking longer. It's 12 to 18 months, sometimes 2 years. As they build their platform and get their experiences that they need, and it's just become, and that's how it is at the moment, and that might change. These things do change and evolve. So I can't give a definite, this is what it is, but that's the range. But it doesn't mean you're working, they're working with me the entire time. They do the intensive mm-hmm. for 4 to 5 months, and then after that it's a as needed support until they get where they want to go.
I'm sure that there are people that try, test the waters, and don't like it and want to come back. Has that ever occurred in yep. your experience where somebody
yeah,
went out there
yeah.
and they're like, you know what? I just really miss it.
Yes.
I think I just needed a break
yeah.
and I'm going to go back and I'm going to maybe find another job and restart maybe in a different city, in a different hospital, in a different practice model.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've had a couple of clients where that's happened. And, one tries to...
Do you feel that as a failure? Do you...
Not at all. Not at all.
Not at
it's,
all.
It's a journey. It's and I think for some people, they're just desperate to leave clinical medicine, but they need to get an income. So I had a surgeon who transitioned to UM. He was absolutely burnt out. And he did UM for a full year. And now he's back doing surgery again.
Yeah.
But on his own, he's changed the structure of his practice and he's in a different environment. But that's what he needed to do. And that is why I started off by saying, if somebody's truly burned out, I'll often say, get some therapy, get a break. And then when you feel things are, you know, a little bit more stable, come back and we can, you know, not now, because I don't want people to jump from one thing to the next just because it's something that they can actually help themselves, or all they need is a 6-month break and they can go back and be rejuvenated. So, but you know, I see our careers as a journey, and all of my clients who have gone back, come back in, well, I did two of them, they've made connections in the non-clinical career field that they're like, yeah, so when I am ready, I've got those relationships. Some of them are, one of them is still on a board of sorts where they still engage. So it's like everything we do, nothing is ever wasted. It's all part of the process.
Are there any, you know, if anybody's thinking about this or sees this in the future, are there any particular books, skills, routines that you recommend as far as, you know, getting experience that can help your additional skills, that can help you transition in the future?
Yeah, this is such a great question. And the one I get a lot is, oh, let me get an MBA, because I think an MBA will help me. And MBAs are great if you're wanting to be a CMO or hospital leadership. And even then, many of those don't have MBAs. And sometimes the job you transition to will pay for you to get an MBA. So you don't necessarily, 90% of the time, you don't need another degree. It really depends, Lucas, on what you're thinking about doing. So if you're really interested in consulting and process flow, or you've developed a practice system, or you are a robotic, you're absolutely amazing at robotics, you can begin to put out your feelers to do some consulting on the side, where you can start getting experience doing that kind of consulting, so that it's not only additional income, but when it comes time to pivot, you've got that additional experience. You know, if you know that, you know, I'm not ready now, but I think in 10 years from now, I want to be, maybe I think I want to go into pharma. Then you start building relationships. You might take a couple of inexpensive pharma courses. To me, there isn't really a one-size-fits-all book, or because it really depends what you want to go into. But the one thing that I would say is true for everybody is I sort of recommend a little bit of a periodic career audit. You know, just every few, it doesn't even have to be every year. Really sit down and this is not judgmental. It's not an assessment. It's not evaluation. It's just looking at, you know, on a scale from 0 to 10, very simply, how happy am I in my career? Now, all careers have nonsense, right? If we're 80% happy, that's fantastic. You know, some people are 90%, man, more power to you. But from a scale of 0 to 10, like, how am I still going where I want to go? Am I good? Do I like the person I've become? And again, it's not to judge. It's just like a little bit of an audit of are you living the life you want to live? And if not, you know, what do I need to do? What's something that I can do to get more information, or to see what mentor do I need to talk to? You know, okay, so I'm a doc in the box and I really want a leadership position. Okay, so who do I need to talk to? Who are leaders? How did they get there? So I do recommend that you do have sort of this internal audit every once in a while, because it's very easy for us to get 15 years in, and I see this all the time, and just done one thing after another because that's what was expected of you, and suddenly you're like, I don't like this anymore, and I don't know where I lost myself along the way.
Karen, do you think that you're... Again, also along the lines of this, we understand the community that listens to this pod. And there may be a lot of people right now that have not recognized that they're probably ready to steer things up, to potentially connect with somebody like you and revisit their decisions, are there any like early signals, things that people that are listening may have not really considered of how they're feeling, of how they're or not feeling? I'm just thinking like, are you having trouble sleeping? Are you, you know, disengaged from your wife or who knows? I'm just saying, are there potentially some warning signs that you think we could say, hey, if you're going through this, you may have not considered thinking that a career change may be something that could help. And so before you become a lost soul, maybe there are some signs that you could find along the way that are a little bit of, you know, hey, deep little alarms going off that you may not recognize. Are there any of these things that you think could be worth these people self-exploring as they're driving to their jobs right now, listening to us this morning or this evening or whenever it is that they're doing it?
Yeah. So there are a couple of things to notice, and it's really about noticing, you know, how did you feel when you woke up this morning and had to come into work? So if you're on your drive into work, how have you felt the last month of mornings? Has it been most mornings you wake up and there's what's happening in your stomach? Is there a sense of dread or a sense of excitement? What happens to you during the day at work? Are you just completely exhausted? And you never really, you used to be able to do pretty well. Now you're just completely exhausted. You get home and you just kind of want space. You, the kids and the wife but you, or the husband, but you're just like, I can't right now. I just need space. So the anticipation, Sunday night scaries is another one. Many people feel Sunday night scaries and they've felt it for years. It's not necessarily a signal, but it's just something to pay attention. Notice what gives you energy and what drains you. So like I mentioned, you know, 80% of our jobs or 70% of our jobs can be pretty good. And of that piece, if you're really, really tired and you walk into a room with a patient, do you feel more tired afterwards or do you feel energized? Do you feel like you've done something? That's a sign that maybe patient care is still, you're still doing good, right? And maybe the dread is something else. And then pay attention to what just sucks the life out of you and see if it's changed. And again, it's noticing patterns. You know, we all have one bad day. We all have a few bad days a month where like there's that patient on your schedule and you're just like, oh no, is this going to be, I'm going to be over and I'm going to be, I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about sort of a consistent pattern. And just in the beginning, just to notice what's happening, you don't have to do anything about it, but just noticing is really important. And if you are feeling like, I don't really like patient care anymore, it's okay. I mean, and I'm not saying you should, I'm not judging it. I'm just saying, notice that. And what about patient care is not right for you anymore? So those are the kinds of things. And then, like you mentioned, you know, the lack of sleep, any change in your pattern, but I always say over the last month, over the last 3 months, what's been happening? Have you been just progressively disengaged? And you know, there's a fine line between this and burnout. So if you do have any of those, see if you can get with a therapist or with a really trusted friend or a mentor and begin to think out loud about this. It might not mean that you need to change. It might just mean that you need to set a few more boundaries or say no to a few things that are not floating your boat anymore. And there are lots of strategies here at this point. Those are the basic things. Yeah.
I was going to add, I wouldn't be surprised if our patterns of drinking, for example, start changing. Our profession is phenomenally well known for normalizing drinking and heavy drinking. I'm referring to liquor, right? Alcohol. You go to meetings, it's like what you do, right? Like after, you know, it's normal. Like you go out to a industry sponsored thing and it's like a lot of, you know, if you meet, you're always, oh, let's go out for a drink.
Yeah, right? The bar at the SVS meeting this year was pretty packed.
And everybody, and I'm sorry I didn't go, but I'm sure everybody was pretty hammered multiple times throughout the same week. Yeah. And, you know, I'm saying I myself have been through moments in my career when I look back that when I was really unhappy, the only thing that I could remember would bring me happiness was thinking about going home and popping up that bottle of wine. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't anything detrimental. I wasn't driving. But the fact that you seek this comfort in alcohol, which, listen, I'm not out here trying to call anybody, like, you know, if you drink, you drink. If you don't drink, you drink. But there is an addictive thing here, and it palliates your neurological condition, right? It soothes your, it feeds multiple, you know, pathways of, and so, I mean, I personally have been there, and I think that that is something that you've probably noticed, but I would love to hear from you. Have you noticed that these abnormal patterns of drinking and, you know, not necessarily to pass out, but maybe, hey, you know, why are you popping a bottle of wine every day? Like, that's maybe a little bit too much. You know, are these things too important to notice?
Yeah. Drinking and overeating.
That's
two things.
Of course.
Yeah. And I've had physicians say to me, I knew I was going in the right direction when I didn't have to drink so much. And,
yep.
You know, because I don't yep. really ask them how much they drink. I mean, after this conversation, maybe I should, but it's not something we get into.
Oh,
but I have had people volunteer that they were
I would assure you that there's a very intimate relationship. When shit's not okay, you end up escaping in our profession. I feel it's super normalized to drink a lot. And I mean, we've had talks about how during residency, it's almost like the goal when you're out of training, when you're not on call, is to go and get completely hammered. And somehow we you know, perpetuate that. Although things have been changing more, right? We feel like our trainees are now a little bit healthier.
Yeah, right.
And there's a, you know, people, maybe there's other stuff, right? Shrooms and other stuff that may be actually healthier, right, than that. But yeah, I mean, I think that it's important. If you find yourself sometimes maybe saying, man, am I maybe drinking a little bit too much? Or have you broken your rule of maybe I shouldn't drink if I'm on call? Like, you start cutting corners. And you may not necessarily be a full-blown alcoholic, but be mindful that maybe it's an itch. Maybe it's your body telling you that there's something off,
yeah.
And you're doing something that's just not good for you.
And to know that, you know, I think a lot of the time people know that things are off, but then to see the options and to see them as real and as possible, I feel like that's the disconnect, that's the breach that needs to be crossed. So, you know, thank God for people like Karen that make their life mission to be the bridge between the chasm from one edge to the other. So, you know, coming to the end here, Karen, I find all these topics super interesting.
Very, very good.
Because it is a wonderful vocation, but it's a limiting vocation in a sense, because we become hyper specialized and then we pigeon ourselves and we develop this identity that forms and informs our entire life. So having, you know, people like you that help, you know, widen the horizons and open up possibilities, I think that's super exciting. So thank you very much for spending some time with us. And if there's anything else that you need, that you would like to share, or like, how can people get in contact with you? And if they're interested, you know, starting this journey, that'd be great.
Yeah. Thank you, Lucas. Thank you, Miguel. And this has been a really amazing conversation, and one that needs to be had in so many, with so many different physician groups. So thank you. I think one of the ways, well, you can reach me by email. I'm Karen, K-A-R-E-N, at drkarenbarnard.com. That's D-R-K-A-R-E-N-B-A-R-N-A-R-D.com. if you go to my website, you can sign up for my newsletter, which really is a weekly tips. And I write an article and I cover the span of what we've been talking about and more. It's totally free. You'll get it in your inbox every week, just to get a sense of get some ideas and also maybe get a feeling for how I work. You can also find me on LinkedIn. I do offer a career clarity call. It's an hour call where we talk, and my goal is for you to have some action plans by the end of the call. It's not a sales call. It's just a one-off clarity call with me, just to help you get started. So I love doing those, and I often end up, that's all people need is just that hour to help them get some sense of direction, and they're off to do their own thing. So yeah, I'd say that those are the two main things I wanted to share with the audience if they wanted to reach me.
Awesome. Well, Karen, thank you very much. I'm sure there's going to be a lot of people tickled by what we've discussed here, and I want to call you guys out. If you're thinking, if you're uncomfortable, if there's a niche, if something's off, just consider.
Yeah, explore. And even if it isn't, explore. Why not?
Life, you know, you only live once, man.
Yeah.
Don't get yourself sucked into a boring hole of nothingness and just daily grind. Like, come on, break out of the system. We've had so many good stories about this. Karen's a tool to do that. But we had a great conversation last week with somebody who just broke the entire mold and did something amazing. And like that, we hope to hear more stories. So anyway, thank you very much, Doc. And let's have you back one of these days. Let's talk on about different things with you. I think it'll be super interesting in the future to have another combo.
Yeah, I look forward to that. Thank you.
All right. Thanks, Karen.
Thanks. Thank you very much.
Thank you, everyone.
Bye-bye.
Two vascular surgeons walk into a bar and come out with a podcast. We are talking everything vascular and not. Welcome to the Life of Flow podcast.